Hey guys, welcome back to our latest episode of The Drawing Board. My name is Reed Osi, and it has been a while. I'm gonna have to look back, but it's probably been since about March that we've released any type of podcast content. It's been crazy. We've been busy. So much has changed since then outside of the dumpster fire that 2020 has been. It's been a great year for us. We've been able to work with a ton of kids, work with a ton of coaches, helping programs get better. It's been a blast as we just navigate the roller coaster that is COVID and the restrictions and everything, but it's been a great learning experience. You know, one of the cool things that's changed for us is, you know, we're going to change our podcast setup. So you're still going to be able to access The Drawing Board on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all those platforms. But we're also, if you're watching this, you've figured it out by now, adding the visual component. So we're actually going to be filming our podcast. My wife and I just moved into our new house, have a pretty unique, cool office setup here. I'm really excited about the opportunity to bring guests not only into my home and interview them here, but then also to be able to have them remote. We have some really cool guests lined up. It's going to be a really cool experience. I'm super excited to bring it to you guys. Our first guest that we have on, interviewed earlier this week, Justin DeGrood, the top assistant at Gustavus Adolphus. Justin's been on before. I can say he's the first returning guest to the podcast. He does a great job running the defense at Gustavus. He's a defensive guru. So one of the things that we talk about is not only the absolutes that he has as a defensive coach, what they try to do year in and year out, but also their willingness to change based on their personnel. It's a great conversation. Not going to give too much of it away, so we'll get started right here. Here's Justin DeGrood. All right, we're here with Justin DeGrood. Justin is the top assistant at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter. Gustavus is a part of the MIAC. The MIAC is known historically as one of the top Division III leagues in the country, year in and year out. Obviously an interesting situation this year with COVID, not sure exactly what their season looks like, but wanted to bring Justin on today to chat about defense, not only defense, but about systems. And as like we said before, Justin, historically, the defenses that he's either led or been a part of leading is typically in the top two, top three in the league every single year. So I wanted to bring Justin on and talk a little bit about what goes into that process year in and year out, if it's kind of the same system or if they're changing things as they go. So Justin, thanks for hopping on.
Hey, thanks for having me, Reed. Oh, this is a perfect timing, especially in COVID, considering I am COVID positive right now, sitting in isolation in the bedroom. So forgive me for my backdrop, but this is reality right now.
Well, it's nice to know that you're feeling healthy enough to come on. I personally tested negative today. So in the COVID wars, as my best friend, can I talk smack on the podcast that I am beating you?
Yeah, for sure. Not the first nor the last.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So, you know, I'm sure we'll get going into some tangents along the way. But one of the things that as we mentioned before, talking about defensively, you know, your teams, whether you've been coaching at the high school level or at the college level, I think you mentioned 10 years now that you've been, you know, leading the defense or been a part of the defensive team. Talk to me a little bit about kind of this time of the year. You're, you know, normally a preseason type setup. What are some things that you would be going over with your guys to prepare them for a strong defensive season?
Yeah, I mean, right now, obviously, in a normal season, we'd be gearing up to play. You know, our first game would be right around the corner this coming weekend. And so, you know, that's a little bit different. But in the preseason for us, you know, three weeks leading up to, you know, those first games, it is implementing systems, you know, it changes year to year. You know, sometimes if you have a really new group, you're doing a lot more teaching those first couple weeks. And if you have a, you know, veteran group, then you can kind of in some regard just you know, pick up where you left off. And you know, here at Gustavus, that was going to be one thing that we were going to be really excited about, is we graduated one guy, we brought pretty much everybody back, and we had a very strong defensive year last year. And so that's kind of what we would have been doing. But obviously the situations that we're in this year, that changes things. But, you know, every year it's different. You know, to your question, what would we be doing? It kind of just depends, you know, what you bring back and, you know, maybe how you performed last year. And, you know, just like we should be doing on the offensive side, which I think it's a lot of emphasis defensively. As soon as the season's over, you know, I'm watching video and watching film and going back and seeing what worked well. You know, where did we fall short? And is it something systematic? Is it something that maybe I didn't teach well, you know, or was it just not executed well enough because it was the wrong time to run certain mm-hmm. things? So all of those things kind of play into, you know, what we're doing obviously in October and early November.
No, I think that makes sense. There's different types of players, different systems. I mean, you can win a lot of different ways. One of the things that I've appreciated about watching your teams over the years is just that your ability, your willingness to adapt based on your personnel. So talk to me a little bit about that. Obviously, I get a lot. Well, let me backtrack. Get a lot from coaches saying like, "Hey, what are like your absolutes?" And from a skill development side, I hate speaking in absolutes. So we talked about that a lot. If I tell you not to do something one time down the floor, chances are the basketball gods are going to want you to do exactly what I just told you not to. And so we try to talk about situations and remove absolutes. But, you know, defensively, do you have any kind of absolutes that stick with you every single year, kind of regardless of your personnel? Like, you know, playing at Hillcrest Academy, it's Greg Preston winning 470 games or something. I mean, it was like, we might switch up what we're doing, but like, we're going to get up the line and we're going to deny you and we're going to pressure the heck out of you. Are there things that you as a coach like to do kind of regardless of who you have in your system?
Yeah, it's a great question, because over the last 10 years, I think we have ran really dramatically three different defensive systems, maybe even four, to be completely honest with you. And so, you know, we have been, you know, the standard, you know, lock and trail, you know, if you're on ball side, you get in a hip pocket, and if you're away, you can shoot a gap. And then there were a few years where we switched everything, you know, switch mm-hmm. five, deny all that. And then we went to a gap, you know, pack line for a few years. And, you know, now we're running something differently as well. And with all of those, obviously came different rules and all of that. Now, I would say the one thing, you know, and this isn't anything crazy, but really the one thing that's been consistent with all those is really not following and bailing out. And I think that has become even more particular, just because with the pressure that the offense is putting on us defensively with putting the ball on the floor. And I think even 10 years ago, I don't feel like the ball was being penetrated. Defenders weren't being isolated as much as they are now. And so I actually think it was easier not to foul. Yeah. 10 years ago, I think you had to do a better job of teaching not to foul in the post, you know, mm-hmm. and back to the basket stuff. But now that the game has evolved offensively, and especially at our level where there's not as many back to the basket guys, yep. We've really had to teach, you know, keeping your hands off and not bailing out either on the drive or obviously at the rim.
No, I think that makes sense. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about offensive concepts and how things are consistently changing. You know, I think I remember, you know, back when we were coaching together, you talked about how like high school basketball was always 10 years behind the NBA. You know, different concepts that way, offensively, especially, you know, everyone was running ball screens. It's like, well, we don't run ball screens. Well, sure enough, you know, running ball screens and then dribble handoffs. And well, we don't do that. And I think part of the reason teams don't do that is we just don't know how to teach it very well. And so as, you know, time progresses, we get more and more film, technology gets advanced where we have access to that stuff. Now it becomes easier to teach because there's more tutorials out there. And, you know, we're always talking about offense, but, you know, defensively, you have to match what's changing on the offensive end of the floor. You know, 10 years ago, outside of Grinnell, it wasn't threes and layups. You know, we weren't talking about the analytics of the game. It was like, hey, we put the ball on the floor. You know, we weren't talking about pull-up jumpers being inefficient. I know that you, in your playing days at Gustavus, you guys, right before you got there, going to the national championship game and, you know, probably should have won the game, you know, some tough calls down the stretch. But playing a system that analytically they would say right now is just doesn't make much sense. You guys did that really well. Now you're seeing teams, especially in your league, you know, St. John, St. Thomas, especially looking, you know, just talking to them, threes and layups, you know, St. John's being able to have athletes put the ball on the floor. The game's changed. And so not only are you forced to change maybe how you defend on the perimeter, but knowing full well that a team like St. Thomas does not want to settle for the mid-range, that's got to change the way that you defend, you know, maybe away from the ball or even on the ball, knowing that they get inside the arc, they're not trying to get to that pull-up. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that was, you know, that's been a big thing for me because the way that I grew up playing, both in high school and in college, it was played for absolutely tremendous defensive teams. When I was in high school and my playing time at Gustavus, we were always fabulous defensively. And the way that, you know, we played was that style that you would think about, just being that you slide over, you take charges, you stay on your feet, you don't go for fakes, you know what I mean? Like, just whatever old school mentality that I think first comes to mind, that's what I played. And really, that's what I believed in.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I actually still do love it. However, I came into coaching collegiately with that mindset. And then that's how I was going. That's how my teams were going to play. You know, like I took a lot of pride in, I want my teams to play that way. The difference is that things have changed, and you're exactly right. And in the MIAC, we have some of the most prolific offensive teams in the country analytically. You know, you can go to Synergy and it's like every year the top 10 teams in the country, there's almost always going to be two or three MIAC teams in the top 10, which is just ridiculous. It goes to it kind of shows you, you know, how good defensively you have to be competitive in the league, you know. But you're right, you know, so from a defensive standpoint, I went from teaching the game of, you know, short and choppy to get out to the 3-point line to keep somebody in front to, okay, maybe there's something to like flying out at the 3-point line to try to run somebody off the 3-point line.
Which was a cardinal sin.
Oh,
when
for
I
sure.
Like, stay for down. Sure.
Stay down. Correct. Don't get blown by. And, you know, right now, to your point, we want to try to force some of those teams into one dribble pull-ups or those mid-range. You know, and the other thing for us is taking charges. I think verticality has changed the game that way. Just how, you know, you can jump and stay vertical and you can meet people at the rim. That has changed what we do defensively as well, how we teach. So, yeah, I mean, again, I think oftentimes we always think about how the game is changing offensively and how we can adapt and change our offensive systems to that. But on the flip side of it is we need to figure out how the game is being, you know, played offensively, and then in turn change what we're doing defensively. And I think that's a big part why so many teams went to the pack line. Because there's so much dribble penetration in trying to control that. You know, what I see at our level is you have to be really, really good to be able to play the pack, just because there's so many good shooters in our league that, you know, if you get late on a closeout, you're just going to, it's going to be death by a million paper cuts or 3-pointers. So the game is evolving for sure.
I think the verticality at the rim opposed to taking charges. I mean, I'm pretty sure I have like a freaking school or state record for charges taken my senior year. Probably not, but I'd like to think so. But that was like that was a momentum play, right? Like that was the big, like you were the same way, like with Coach Bolter. It was like, hey, take the charge. It was the right thing. And had a conversation with Matt Fletcher, you know, a good friend of both of ours, and who's now at Concordia St. Paul. And one of the things I think this was Fletch who said it, because they would go vertical at the rim as well. Said that officials complimented him and said it's so much easier to officiate your games, because you know, we've now implemented the charge circle at the high school level, and now it's so difficult, I think, for officials, because you're trying to look down, you're also trying to look up. It's bang bang, like, well, are his feet outside the circle? Well, yeah, but the dude was moving, like, it's not even close. But so now we're watching all these things. So the officials are complimenting, saying, hey, it's much easier to officiate. Now, I'm not sure if that's the case at the high school level yet, just because I don't think people see it. I mean, you got Jake Guzzi, who's could just meet you at the rim, and at 230 or 240, whatever he is going to go and chest you and hold his ground. Not the case at every high school.
Right.
But I think it was Fletcher who said, okay, you have three possible outcomes if you go to take a charge. Number one, it's a charge. That's good. Number two, it's a no call. Or number two is a block. He goes, so that's not good. And number three, almost the worst is a no call, because typically you're taking a charge rotating off of the ball at the paint and or at the rim. And so now if it's a no call, you're on the floor and there's nobody to box out the backside guy. So now you have three potential outcomes and two of them are not in your favor.
Yep. Nope. 100% agree. Yeah, 100% agree. And it is something where, you know, I think personnel obviously helps for this. And that's, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, we changed last year is when we fully went to a little bit different style here. And I should say our newest style defensively. And you mentioned Jake Guzzi for us, and we have Peter Lundquist who is also really, really good at meeting people at the rim, and that's something that we practice. And it goes against anything and everything that I was ever taught. Like, we are now teaching to go leave our feet and to block shots. However, you know, it's not as uncontrolled as that sounds, right? I mean, we have rules and systems in place for how they should do it, or when they should do it, or what they're looking for, and teaching angles, all timing, all of those things. And then you need good, you know, good athletic, intelligent players to go out and execute it, which thankfully we have. But, you know, part of the reason why we went to this was because of that personnel, right? Pete Lundquist was really developing into somebody that could do that. Jake Guzzi, we got as a transfer. We had watched play a lot. We recruited out of high school. We knew what we were going to get. And so we kind of wanted to build that defense from the inside out. And try to force people to those guys to the inside. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think Fletch is hitting the nail right on the head too, is that, you know, you go over and take a charge. I think there's just too many times that it doesn't end in the defense's favor. You know, and I think the thing with the verticality too, is at least I have felt that most of those close, the 50-50s that I feel like we're almost always going against us when we slid over to take a charge, I feel like are now no calls, and they're just play ons when people leave to go vertical. And then that leaves us in the advantage, because we're still scrambling and still playing, because we're teaching how to, you know, to pinch down on the weak side to cover up that backside block or whatever it is. And so, and the other thing for us is we just really like to play fast. Play really fast, play really free. And so that kind of that fits us as well.
No, I love it. I think that there's probably a lot of coaches rolling in their grave at the idea of, you know, hey, run over there and jump as high as you can and meet that guy at the rim, right? It's
hilarious, because you brought up Coach Bolter, my high school coach, Hall of Fame coach, and he was at one of our games this year. And it's funny, because in my mind, I just had this thought before the game even started, and I don't even know why it crossed my mind, but I was like, he's going to be thinking, what in the hell is he teaching this defense? This is not what I taught him to do.
I like, offensively, from a skill development standpoint, like, you know, it's Coach Preston, but then he connected me to Woody Wilson. And Woody passed away about a, you know, I think just over a year ago, a year and a, Yeah, probably 2 years ago now. And, you know, he's a Tony Bennett guy, you know, coached at Green Bay. I mean, he's like Hall of Fame guy. And the stuff that I'm teaching that is, you know, basic fundamentals, you know, now, but back when, you know, he did it till he was like 80. It's like, rip the ball off the chair, get there in a dribble. And I'm sure there are some things that he's losing his mind over. Did you have a thought there?
No, I was just going to say, you know, I think lots of times offensively, we think about, you know, what is our personnel going to allow us to do offensively? You know, are we a team that can really put the ball on the floor? Are we going to be a team that shoots a lot of threes? Is our bread and butter inside, whatever it is? And, you know, I always, when people, especially young coaches, ask me from a defensive standpoint, I always encourage them to think about their defense the same way. And I think that's something that's often overlooked. And, you know, I love to play really fast and I love to pressure, you know, that's how I love to watch that style. I love to teach that style. But, you know, if we didn't have a bunch of, you know, 6'3 to 6'6 athletes that could do that, then that's not something that we would probably do. You know, and that's why a few years ago that we were playing more of a pack because we were so small. We kind of had to protect the inside as a group. So, you know, I think that just goes to show you how important it is to, and especially at the D3 level, Reed, which, you know, because you've been at multiple levels at the D3 level, we can't always pick and choose, you know, our personnel. You know, obviously we're going to recruit the best that we can to fit our needs and our desires, but we don't always get exactly what we want, you know, or at least top option or whatever it is. And so I think we, especially at our level, have to be really good at every year just being fluid in what we're doing and what we're teaching. Mm-hmm. Adaptability is key.
I think that's huge. You know, you make the point about Division III. You and I both know that you have to play, you have to be a hooper. I mean, you have to be very talented to play at the Division III level. But at the same time, it changes a little bit, you know, from a system standpoint where, you know, having coached, spent a year at the Division II level and having coached at the NAIA level, there's a lot of times if you're 6'8" and you have any upside, there's going to be at least a little bit of money thrown at you at the scholarship level, just because they're, you know, they're going to take, you can't teach height. Right. And so there are going to be years. I know a couple years ago you had your 4 and your 5 man. I think Jason Fall, Kelsey Thomas were both sub 6'5", and it was just kind of, that's just what the makeup of the roster was. And so I think that definitely changes things a little bit too. You know, we talk about changing, year to year. One of the phrases that I've coined is, fast food coaches. I think we eat fast food, tastes good, makes us feel good. There's no real nutrients, doesn't really add anything to us, from a health standpoint. And I think that from a coaching standpoint, there's so much content out there and we become consumed with, or, you know, infatuated with consuming content. Right? Like what's next? What's next? What's next? How do you as a coach kind of balance that where, you know what I'm saying? Where you're like, hey, we want to be able to implement what's this new information, right? You go to a coach's clinic and you hear something, hey, this is really good, without just like wavering in the wind and doing, you know, you never establish any sort of identity. Talk to me about that.
I think that's a really good point, because the reality is there are hundreds of really good ways to do things. There really is. And you can find, even with your specific personnel, there's lots of good different ways that you could do it. Right. And so I think part of it is, you know, finding something, and that something is obviously very important, that fits who you are as a coach, because whatever you're teaching every day, you need to really believe in. And I think that's something that has been so key to me. And so whether I'm at a Final Four, you know, learning something or listening to a podcast or watching tons of videos, you know, especially over the last 9 months, you know, there's lots of stuff that you can be pulling, but obviously not everything gels exactly with who I am or maybe what I want us to be about. So I think, yeah, there needs to be some founding principles about who you are as a person and how you want, you know, your program and system to be ran. And so, because you're right, I think oftentimes because there is so much really good stuff out there, you can start to waver and you can be like, oh, this is really good. And then, you know, you listen to Johnny Tower and you listen to that and like, oh, that's really good. And then you listen to Coach Bennett and then it's like, and all these things are so different. And now you're just like, well, gosh, you know, if you try to pick something from everybody, that might not work either. Cause it needs to be able to make sense. Yep. You know, and so for me, I just go back to what do I want Gustavus defense to look like, regardless of the actual X's and O's of what we're teaching. I know that I want us to play extremely fast. I want us to be super disciplined with our feet. I know that I want us to try to dictate pace, whatever, however that looks. And so those are things for me that regardless of if we're in a pack or we're in a deny or we're meeting people at the rim or we're sliding to take charges, whatever it is, those things don't waver from the things that I want. So I think that, you know, that's part of it. And I think it's the same thing, you know, when you're looking at offense, right? It's, you need to look for those things that you want to be built around. And then the other pieces you can figure out as you go.
No, I think that's so true. I know talking to coaches, just consuming content myself on whether it's Twitter or social, you know, any type of social media platform. I think there's a lot of people out there that they love the game. They love consuming everything about the game. And you can, I think it's very easy just to get lost in that. And then also I think just from a standpoint of developing a system, you know, I think it's our human nature that we want to be validated in what we're doing. And I think oftentimes like it goes with your gut. Like if you know what you're doing and you've studied it really well, you know, like the back of your hand, then sometimes we just got to go, you got to trust it and work through it. That's kind of been my thing. You know, earlier this spring, I love this conversation. You remember the Zoom call we were on and it was Matt Fletcher and Brad Bigler. And they got into a little bit of a topic of, you know, offensive stuff, which is awesome because those two are incredibly close. Fletch played for Biggs. Now they're both head coaches in the league and they're running similar stuff. Fletch has put his twist to the stuff they ran and they start talking about concepts and ball reversals and importance. And Fletch is just unwavering. Like, no, I had success. Like this is what it is. And they go back and forth and it's playful and they love it. But you know, if you've put in the time and there's, you know, the confidence, arrogance piece in there that kind of goes back and forth, but you put in the time, you know what you're trying to do. You know what you're trying to accomplish. You believe in it, then freaking believe in it, man. Like, let's go all in. Let's, you know, buy it. It was a little bit this year with the Rockets. But that was really interesting the way that they decided that they were going to go small ball. And then they started getting their butts kicked a little bit in the playoffs. And people were like, well, throw Tyson Chandler out there. Like that dude hasn't played a meaningful minute since March. Correct. Like, no, this is what they're doing. They're sticking with it. And I know you got to pick the hill that you're going to die on sometimes, but
yeah, for sure. No, and I think defensively, that's, you know, I think that's a little bit why, you know, you try to at least have a couple of things defensively that you can go to, because there are going to be those situations, obviously, where you need to make adjustments and stuff like that. But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, the reality is you really want to be good at what you do. And excuse me. It doesn't have to be the most complicated thing. You don't have to catch your opponent by surprise. I mean, I think about how much time, you know, we spend scouting and doing all that stuff, you know, within our league. But the reality is we all know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, when we go play St. John's or St. Thomas or Bethel or Augsburg or whoever it is, like we know what they're going to run.
Yeah,
they know what we're going to run. And really what it comes down to those nights is who executes what they want to do better. And
yeah.
I think that goes back to what you're saying. Like, you have to believe in something. You have to trust something as a coach. Mm-hmm. And then, because that'll filter down to your players, and the players that believe in something and execute it as well as they can, those are the teams that are usually in a better position at the end of the night.
I had a conversation the other day with Troy Dobbs, whose son is Drake Dobbs, who was, I think, the runner up for Mr. Basketball in Minnesota. It's a chance to be the starting point guard as a freshman at Liberty. And the A-Sun released their schedule, and I just pulled it up. So they're playing not back-to-backs, but they're going to start, Liberty's going to start at Lipscomb on New Year's Eve, and then January 2nd, they play at Lipscomb again. So you could be playing on a Tuesday and a Thursday. Then they got Florida Gulf Coast on the 7th and again on the 9th, and then at Stetson the 14th and the 16th. I said to Troy, we're going to see how many coaches really know how to coach, can make adjustments without, I mean, you're going to play a game, you're going to watch some film and get a shoot around, and you're going to see not necessarily who's going to be able to coach those in-game adjustments, but who's going to have their guys coached up. They understand, you know, systematically what you're trying to do, and then can make adjustments on the fly. I've worked for coaches that are like, hey, you know, we don't worry about what they're doing. We're just going to do what we do. And I'm like, yeah, I get that to an extent. And I think that's my mindset. We're going to do what we do, but what we do is going to be able to make adjustments really quickly because we understand conceptually what the heck we're trying to do here. And so I'm super interested to see some of these conferences that are going to play two games in 3 days, what teams are going to be coached up. Obviously it depends a lot on personnel and young guys, old guys, returners, you know, how quickly they can pick things up. But it is going to be interesting to see what teams in short amount of time can get coached up, ready to make adjustments.
Now, that's gonna be super fascinating because for a lot of, I mean, even for those athletes as well, like, that goes against nothing we've ever done before. I mean, even guys that play in high school, you're like, you're not playing the same opponent twice in a week or anything like that. I think there were a couple of times for me in my coaching career so far where, I think it's been St. John's a number of times for whatever reasons, like, we've ended our season at St. John playing St. John's, and then we've flipped around like a Saturday to a Tuesday and we've played them in the first round of playoffs or something.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And it really is interesting how your mentality changes. Cause, you just played, you either won or you lost, right? And so that plays into how you're trying. Okay. You know, you think as a coach, like, all right, what are our guys thinking right now? We either won or we just lost. So now you need to coach that mentality piece of it, depending upon how the game just went, goes in. Like, there's going to be a ton of different things that go into it. So you're right. I mean, coaching the game is going to change when, you know, you play somebody twice in 3 days. And it'll be really interesting. I mean, it'll be really interesting for those players too, you know, just for their individual matchups. You know, somebody, you know, gets you one night and you want to, you know, those guys have some pride. They want to get them the next night. This is like hockey. We should be talking to some hockey coaches to see how they do it. Cause this is their world.
it is definitely going to be interesting. Obviously, going to kind of see what the MIAC does. I know that there's some, you know, the UMAC is going to start, not necessarily their conference, but some teams in the UMAC are going to be playing some games coming up next week. It's got to be difficult for you.
I think the hard part is, and I say it all the time, you know, I feel for our guys. I feel for, you know, all the student athletes. Obviously, this is something that they love and, you know, enjoy more than anything. And we remember our, you know, college days, and I feel for them. Obviously I miss it too, but you know, it's harder as a coach, but obviously I do what I do for our guys. And so I certainly feel for them more than anything else.
Nope. I agree with you on that one. Justin, thanks for hopping on. I hope that you get healed up. I did see that you guys, you sent me a picture right before we came on that you're in the same house, but you're having to do dinner over Zoom.
Dinner over Zoom. That's what we're doing. Good night calls over FaceTime. Yeah, I've used my FaceTime more over the last 5 days than I think I have in the last 5 years. But yeah, it's unfortunate. But what do we got? We got about 4 days left of hotel isolation up in my bedroom. So it could be worse, and I do mean that. Obviously, there's a lot of other people that have a lot worse than. Yep. Than myself and my family. And I tell everybody, my wife is the MVP right now. She's doing solo mom with two little girls right now. So I can't complain too much. I got Netflix, computer, and some podcasting going on to pass my time.
Yeah, she's going to have high hopes that you'll be energized and ready to take over some parenting duties as soon as this quarantine ends. They should have called the doctor. Are you sure he can't come out of that room a day early?
Correct. And then she's just gonna take off for her own quarantine. Has nothing to do with COVID after I get out.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, appreciate it. And we will talk soon.
Awesome. Appreciate you.